You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to hear how one of the planet's best plant chefs pumps out so many tasty plants in one of the hottest restaurants in New York City, ABCV. The V there standing for veggies. And also, Vetti Good. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. This episode is excitedly sponsored by an extremely cool organic medicine company that I love, Genexa. No, I didn't just mix up my words. I really said organic medicine company and Genexa, because that's the name of the organic medicine company. Genexa has a line of 11, one better than the next, homeopathic medicines that work with your body to rid itself of anything from a cold to allergies to sleeplessness to stress to muscle pain to jet lag. And when I say they work with your body, I really mean it, because that's what homeopathic medicine is. It's medicine that utilizes plants, like a passion flower in the case of Genexa's stress release formula, to kind of remind our body of its abilities to work properly. Because Genexa's medicines don't have anything remotely close to a synthetic drug in them, there are zero side effects, which is sweet. As a Party in My Plants listener, you can save a whopping 30% off of any Genexa products you want to buy off their site, genexahealth.com, using the code PARTYPLANTS. And if this was just way too much to remember and now you're stressed and want to go buy their stress relief formula, go to the show notes, partyinmyplants.com/34 for all this info. My guest today knows his way around plants. He knows how to dice them, slice them, present them, and combine them in ways that make them taste better than they've probably ever tasted before. Neil Hardin, the chef de cuisine of ABCV, a plant-based mecca and the third installment of the Jean-Georges run ABC restaurants, is nothing short of a plant whisperer. From breakfast to dinner, he's non-stop pumping out some of the most innovative ways to eat plants to vegans, non-vegans, celebrities, and food critics alike. Seriously, it takes some sort of plant guru to serve a simple plate of sauerkraut to rave reviews and accolades such as groundbreaking. It's just sauerkraut that you eat with a fork. Really? In our chat, which he kindly recorded at the restaurant during some downtime, if downtime actually exists in a booked out for months restaurant, Neil humbly gives us all a backstage view of what it's like to run and execute a world-class plant-based restaurant, though he isn't able to give us all reservations, even to breakfast. Neil, thank you so much for coming on the Party in My Plants podcast.
You're welcome.
I am kind of starstruck right now. This is, you know, you have my favorite restaurant. You are the chef de cuisine of ABCV. And I'd love for you to just start out by telling us, what does chef de cuisine mean? I mean, aren't all chefs chef de cuisine? Like, what else can you be a chef of than the cuisine?
Yeah, well, you know, literal translation means chef of the kitchen, you know, versus an executive chef who's maybe more distant overseer. You know, I'm in the kitchen every day and I'm running the menu and the food and making sure it's good.
Incredible. So how did you get brought on board as chef de cuisine of ABCV? Was there like a top chef audition process, or had Jean-Georges heard of you? Like, how, by the way, we should preface that ABCV is a Jean-Georges restaurant.
Correct. Yeah, definitely. So actually, I had been hearing about the buzz about this restaurant potentially opening years ago.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it was a long process. And at the time, I was involved in a lot of other projects. But when that wound down and it still hadn't opened yet, I had a couple of friends who were working with Jean-Georges already. So I asked them, you know, what's the deal with that? What's that all about? And they're like, well, you know, if you're interested, we could introduce you to the chef team. And so I met them. And then, of course, I had to cook for Jean-Georges. And luckily, he liked my food.
Wow. So what did you make?
Well, I had to make three things in about 3 hours. And I had to make one of their recipes, which was a whole roasted celery root, believe, with a red curry sauce. Mm-hmm. And then I had to make a couple things of my own. I remember I made coconut rice.
Nice.
I want to say asparagus, and I actually can't fully remember that dish. And then I made, lentils and seared golden beets with all this kind of sesame and yogurt and herbs. And the memories are a little foggy, but that was the basic.
I'm sure you were freaked out. I mean, that does sound like a Top Chef audition process.
Yeah, it was definitely the most stressful time cooking I've ever had. You know, it's just they're watching you, and then they give you immediate critique.
Oh my God.
And it was uptown in John George flagship restaurant, you know, the three Michelin star restaurant. So, you know, beautiful, clean, professional, everything is perfect kind of environment. So yeah, it was pretty stressful. But after that, it was a great time afterwards.
Yeah. So did they tell you right away, like the first bite of that coconut rice, he's like, you are my man?
Not right away, but after I cooked and they tasted, we had a pretty long conversation. I remember it being over an hour and a half, maybe, more of an interview. And by the end of it, they were like, you know, well, we're interested. We think we want to bring you on. So I did sort of find something out that day, which was great. Yeah. That was the highlight.
I mean, is that a dream come true?
Yeah. Everything about this project is an absolute dream of mine because I've been involved in healthy food, vegetarian food for a really long time, and I never would have thought it would have got to this point that such a luminary as John George would be interested in it and that I would be able to take it to this level. So yes, definitely a dream come true.
Congratulations. Really amazing. So what were you doing before this? I know that at one point you were at my other all-time favorite plant restaurant, rest in peace, Pure Food and Wine.
Yeah.
So you were there for a while, which was cooking, but not really cooking because it was a raw restaurant.
Correct. Yeah. So after I left there, I took a job in Bali, Indonesia.
Oh.
Yeah. I opened a restaurant at a health spa in the jungle of Bali.
Wow.
So that was a pretty cool experience. And then when I came back from there, I opened a small place in Brooklyn called MOB or Mob.
I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's now deceased, as are many New York City restaurants.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a quirky kind of vegan restaurant owned by a very eccentric French atelier. So it was a very strange place, but we did some cool food there. And then after that, I did a lot of private work and sort of recipe development behind the scenes, out of the spotlight. And then I had a small vegetarian sort of gastropub beer bar place in Brooklyn that also now deceased.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I've done a lot of diverse things, but really my heart is always in restaurant cooking, and especially a restaurant with a sort of a bigger team, nicer room, nicer sort of Manhattan location. I really like that, the energy that brings.
I mean, it sounds like you manifested your dream job.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I got so lucky, but
you deserve it. That's amazing. So how did you become, you know, a vegetarian chef in the first place? How did that happen? You've been vegetarian for a while, right? I think I read since you were a child or a teenager.
Yeah, since I was a teenager. In my house growing up, my parents always made, health-focused food, I would say. Or not always when they were so busy, but most of the time, you know, they kind of came out of the hippie generation, and my dad was always an athlete. So we ate a lot of, like, you know, chickpeas and wheat germ and yogurt and all that kind of stuff. So I already had an interest there. And then, you know, I decided to become vegetarian when I was a teen because, you know, I was an animal lover. So I was really just focused on that more than health at the time. Mm. But then, you know, as I continued on, I was interested in a lot of other angles related to eating this way.
Yeah. Well, I read somewhere that Jean-Georges calls ABCV plant-based, specifically not vegetarian, because he says that the term vegetarian sounds like a disease.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't have the greatest ring to it. I mean, it's informational, but it's not, doesn't sound very charming. I think there's still room for the right term, you know?
Yeah.
For people who eat, plants. There's not really anything out there yet that actually sounds very flattering or good. But hopefully with this new wave of interest in the actual cuisine, we can find a better word.
For sure. I mean, I like plant-based. I think vegetarian's a little exclusive, you know, so I think people just don't feel... It's just kind of black or white, all or nothing. But plant-based, I mean, to me, it just means like you eat a lot of plants. You base your meals, you base your day, you base your diet in plants. And that sounds pretty welcoming and approachable.
Yeah, no, it sounds great to me. I think the only potential pitfall is that it can be a little vague, right?
Mm.
Some people take it to mean like, let's say, vegan or herbivorous. And some people take it to mean a diet that's largely based around plants. So when we were calling ourselves that, there were some people that were disappointed because they expected it to be, you know, not to have things like eggs on the menu. So there was a little pushback there. So I think you're still lacking the perfect term, although I do like plant-based myself.
True. So it is a vegetarian restaurant. I didn't know there were eggs, but I guess I've never been for breakfast. But there's definitely some dairy.
Yes. Minimally, I would say, but here and there.
Yeah. And I also read that Jean-Georges was really against having like nut cheeses. He said vegetable protein masquerading as meat because he thinks that veggies can stand on their own, which hell yeah, they can. And hell yeah, you prove that they can.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm curious how you feel about like no nut cheeses and veggie burgers and stuff like that, which I mean, at least from Pure Food and Wine days, that was a huge part was nut cheeses and stuff.
Yeah, it was. But I mean, that's also a restaurant that was started a long time ago. You know what I mean? So I think the cuisine has evolved. I think also when you're specifically doing that kind of raw cuisine, you necessarily need certain things to fill out the diet so people feel satiated.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're cooking, I think it's a little bit different. I think because then you can use like legumes and grains and these other things that are a little more satiating.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely use lots of nuts and seeds. I think they're a great important part of the diet. And I do, you know, culture a cashew milk into something we use almost as a yogurt.
Mm.
But I agree with him on one point, which is just that there is way too much mock food in this type of diet. And I think that's unappealing to people who aren't specifically motivated to eat this way for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, people who just want to eat this way because it's delicious or makes them feel good are turned off things that are trying to be something that they might eat on a different day.
Totally. I mean, and a lot of those ingredients that make quote unquote fake meats aren't healthy. Like seitan is not something that I at least feel good after eating. I mean, I'll be sick for days.
Yeah. Hard to digest. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a ball of gluten.
Yeah, I mean, and we had a lot of conversations obviously way before we opened about which direction to take. And everybody was definitely on the same page of not only do we want this to be based around vegetables, but we also want it to be healthy. We want people to, you know, jump up from their chair, you know, because we had gone to restaurants out there that were doing something that might be considered similar, but there was like a lot of dairy and a lot of fried foods and like, you know, you know, almost this seemed like they didn't think that you could still be luxurious and decadent without doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe you can have like an elaborate meal, you know, without compromising the healthy aspects of it.
That's awesome. I was actually there the other night and I don't think there was one fried thing, right? I think we got the tofu and that had something crunchy on top, but it wasn't deep fried, was it?
On the tofu, yes. There are some touches here and there. So we have like little crispy garnishes and things on some things. Because I also believe that a part of eating healthy and a part of like moderate eating is moderation, you know? So, you know, little things here and there. Like there's another dish that has a few little potato chips on the side that we make from some market fingerlings, you know, and I think that that's perfect, you know, here and there. I think, you know, a meal based around that will not make you feel very good, obviously.
Yeah.
Our meals are all based around sort of the freshness and the veggies and the herbs and the citrus and the chilies and the, you know, the fresh mushrooms and things. So
yeah, I mean, you just said you make a French fry out of fingerlings that you get like organically at a farmer's market. I mean, if you're going to eat a French fry, I mean, or a chip, that is the highest quality you can make or get or eat.
Yeah. Yeah, we're very ingredient focused. That's just the number one thing.
And is everything organic?
There's some things that are not available organic that we use. Like, for example, we have like some things that are wild foraged, or we have like these hearts of pomaca from Hawaii that are not available organic, but I would say most of all, everything is, and especially all of our dry goods and such are definitely 100%. And there's not actually that many people doing organic at the farmer's market. So we work pretty closely with a couple of people that are to make sure we really lock down a lot of their products, because we do really value that. And I personally.
Yeah. You know, it's great. And you can taste a difference. You can feel a difference. And I mean, we went the other night and I think we had 9 dishes and I walked out of there stuffed, but I felt awesome. Like normally when you're stuffed, you feel like crap. You got to go take your pants off, lie down. You're like bloated, burping, whatever. You feel like crap. But I was stuffed, but I had energy. I like felt great. So it's just a testament to your food being, you know, decadent tasting, but still incredibly healthy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how the recipe development happened. So you're the chef de cuisine, and I read that Jean-Georges did say that the food at ABCV was all Neil, but with my touch, which is amazing that, you know, you're getting that credit. It's yours. So how does that work in terms of creative control? Because I know, you know, you mentioned to me that you were one day, I guess, at the farmer's market maybe, and you saw radicchio and you decided to make this awesome salad and mix strawberries in it, which is an incredibly innovative idea. So did you just like whip that up at home, like taste it? It tasted great. Call Jean-Georges to say like, yo, I'm putting this on the menu tomorrow. Like, how does that work?
So actually, you know, Jean-Georges and also his creative director, Greg Brannon, I work with them both directly, and everything that I create, I taste with them before it ever hits any menu. So sometimes, you know, they'll have commentary. Very often they'll be like, you know, it could use a little more acid, a little more salt, you know, maybe try this ingredient. So it's great. You know, some people might find that to be a little challenging because they want to go with their idea. But I'm working with people with incredible experience and intellect as chefs. So it actually makes me better. And I love the process.
That's awesome.
They taste everything before it goes on the menu.
So you're not one of those like bullheaded chefs who won't take any criticism and it's like my way or the highway, like back off.
I used to be that way when I was younger, but I try not to be that way now because I don't think it's the best thing for the food or the people who come to eat it. So that's, you know, obviously the number one priority. So, you know, I've changed my ways over the years. But, you know, in the case of the salad you were just talking about, you know, it was a little slow one night and Jean-Georges was here. So I was just playing with some things and, you know, I put it together for him and it's like, wow, I really like the idea and the flavors that you're putting here. So then I made it into actually a full dish, sort of got the exact recipe and workshopped it out and brought it back to them. And in that case, they were like, you know, it just needs like a little more acidity to it to bring out all the flavors. So I did that and it was a complete dish and then boom, on the menu that night.
Interesting. That's so cool. I guess you're just a creative guy, apparently. And are you the one who's also in charge of plating? Do you tell everybody in the kitchen what it's supposed to look like as it comes out the door?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And do you approve every dish to make sure like it's, you know, to your liking?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I'm not here every second of every day. So I have my chef team under me, of my sous chefs, and they're the ones who most closely know what my standards are. And I've trained them to recognize my standards. But we go through every single ingredient. We search through every fridge and taste every single thing before service starts to make sure everything is perfect. And if something's not perfect, we do it over. You know, and we really stress making everything every single day. Whereas some restaurants will make ahead and sort of keep it around for a few days, we really emphasize freshness. So
nice. So you're making a lot to order.
Yeah, yeah. Or at the beginning of the day.
Right. And a lot of the people working under you, were they plant-based chefs, you know, before working for you? Was it hard to teach them how to, you know, I'm sure if they're not, then they were really savvy with meat and stuff. And I think cooking with plants, I don't know, you tell me, is it very different? And were these people experienced and was it an easy transition for them?
Well, you know, luckily we had sort of a delayed opening, which is unlucky in one way, but the lucky part that we got a lot of time. So we actually had a few months with our staff before we opened the door. So we're really able to teach them from the ground up. And a few people had extensive experience with this type of cuisine. but many did not. And anyway, we were trying to do some new things anyway. So even the people who had experience, you know, we may have changed their training a little bit, you know, taught them some things. But we have people from all different worlds working with us.
Interesting. And they're loving it. I mean, are you opening even cooks' eyes to the wonders that are plants?
I hope so.
I'm sure so. I'm sure. You know, I heard actually Tom Colicchio say in an interview once that coming up with amazing recipes isn't the hard part of a restaurant. It's nailing a system in which you can produce those amazing recipes perfectly every single time, every single day. I'm curious if you agree with that.
I agree with that 100%. I tell my cooks every day, the thing that makes us different or the thing that makes a great restaurant versus a bad restaurant is just the fact that you can do it the same way every day and that people have the same good experience every day. The hardest thing is maintaining the quality and the consistency when, you know, your products change every day, the companies bring some things, don't bring others, you know, and the way things cook from day to day changes, and like having the instincts and having the knowledge and the experience. And then, yes, and then definitely the systems, you know, systems of making sure everything is coming out perfect.
God, it sounds so stressful. Do you just live off of adrenaline? Like, do you love it in there? Because it's a glass kitchen, so we can see you, which I think would add another element of pressure. I mean, do you just love it or are you stressed 24/7?
A little bit of both. No, I absolutely love what I do. Right now, it's stressful just because it's so new and we want to make sure that everyone gets this really great first impression of it so that people keep coming back. And, you know, obviously we want to be loved by the critics as well. So that's where the primary stress lies. But in general, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and I don't feel that stressed by it. I mostly enjoy it.
That's great. Well, you have to enjoy it to do what you do. I mean, you work what, breakfast through dinner?
Right now, hopefully that won't be for too much longer, but you know, trying to make sure all the details are perfect.
That's good. And I'm assuming like how does it work? Are you just snacking all day? Do you ever sit down and have a meal? Like, do you ever cook at home for yourself or do you just bring home leftovers? Like, how do you eat?
Yeah. So during the day, I usually, I'll drink a lot of coffee in the morning and then I come to work and I have like something small for breakfast, like maybe like a muffin or something. And from our menu. And then I have to taste everything all the time. So I don't really eat. I might eat like a small midday meal. And then usually I don't eat until I come home. My wife cooks and she's a fabulous cook.
Oh, so, well, that's convenient.
To be honest, she cooks far more often at home than I do.
Well, I don't blame you. You cook all day. You cook more than most people cook in a year in a day.
I know, but there is a big difference between the way you cook at work and the way you cook at home. You know, it's just everything's different at a restaurant. You know, when you cook at home, you take something from the beginning to the end. And when you're at a restaurant, you have different ingredients come from different places. And what's happening during the night while you're open, you're just sort of assembling and doing the finishing cooking. It's not the same as, when I'm at home, I have a big garden generally and definitely a big herb garden. So I go out and, you know, pick some things. Sort of move slowly, no recipes, just tastes. And
wow. Where's home that you have a garden?
I live in Brooklyn.
Oh, cool. What part of Brooklyn?
In Crown Heights.
Oh, nice. And you have a garden? That's sweet.
Yeah, we lucked out. I have a big outdoor space. So
nice.
But yeah, it's a whole different experience when you can walk out back and grab some herbs and just relax and it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah, so you do have some relaxation time.
Not much lately, but
you're working towards it. And when you do cook a dinner, like what is kind of your go-to type of dinner? And are you plating it and are you critiquing it? Like can you ever kind of separate your day job from your life and normal eating?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Oh, interesting.
It's easily done. I mean, I have a hard time not critiquing other restaurants. Mm-hmm. And I actually have kind of a hard time eating out because I really hate disappointing food, you know. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, something fancy or something elaborate, but just things that are just poorly thought out or not well done are just, you know, disappointing because you feel like that people don't care about you. And I know what goes into it, and I feel it feels very personal to me. So that's hard. But as far as being at my house, no, it's easy, you know?
Yeah.
Easy to see a whole different world.
Interesting. So you say that when you have sort of a disappointing meal, you almost take it personally, and you feel that the chef or the cooks or the creators, you know, don't care about you. So I guess to flip that, since everything that comes out of your kitchen is incredible, that must mean you really genuinely care about the patrons and the mouths that you're feeding.
Yeah, I do. And I think that, you know, everyone that works with us does, you know. And I think if you see John George walking around the dining room, that's essential to his entire company. It's just serving people and making sure they're happy and just, you know, it's all about the care.
That's great. You know? I mean, I don't know much about like food energetics, but I definitely have heard that the way that food is prepared has a huge impact on the health benefits of it and, you know, the taste and on all sorts of stuff.
I'm sure it does. I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know much about it, but I've heard that. So we're going with it. So, you know, in terms of feeding mouths, I'm sure it's an unbelievable amount of pressure for you to be the chef of ABCV because, I mean, ABC in general is a hell of a name and you have people coming in by the thousands, you know, just to try this restaurant that's been promoted for like, what, 2-3 years at least. You know, celebrities come in all the time, food critics, top chefs. Like I was once at ABC Cocina and sat right next to Tom Colicchio. And I was like,
he was actually here this morning.
Ah, see,
I saw him this very morning.
Well, like, how does that feel? Are you freaked out? Is it invigorating? Are you terrified? Are you nervous? Like, what goes on when you see these amazing people, you know, and powerful people with big audiences and a lot to say eating your food, and you can literally see them because you have that glass kitchen?
Yeah, I mean, that's the most flattering thing. I mean, we have a lot of celebrities and stuff that come in, but when the chefs come in, that's the biggest honor. And especially, you know, some of the more interesting ones, like we have had recently, Sam Cass, former chef for Obama and food policy. He's come in a few times. And to me, that's like a huge, huge thing for me. That's a big compliment. That's, I feel proud when I see that kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's more pride and excitement rather than your, you know, terrified in the corner, waiting for to hear what they say.
Well, obviously, I want the food and I want it to be perfect, you know.
Yeah.
What I mean? So I take a lot of extra care watching their food. Because, you know, there's also this element of they work so hard and they work so hard for their whole life. And generally, they've sacrificed so much. And I know what they've sacrificed because I do it too.
Yeah.
And you really want to honor that. And you want to make sure that they just, you know, have the best you can do.
Right.
And that's the standard among chefs. I mean, we all do it, you know.
Right. I feel like to be a chef, you know, especially at your level, you have to be a real perfectionist. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, a little obsessive, a little OCD. And all chefs have that about different things, but it's definitely always present in some way.
Yeah. So who would be your dream person to walk through the doors and feed them a meal?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't know, actually. I feel like it maybe has already happened a few times. So
sounds like it. I'm also wondering if there's another plant-based chef who you really admire.
To be honest with you, I don't know too many others.
Hmm.
At least not personally. I don't know. It's hard to say. Most of the time I have my head so down in just working that I feel a little bit out of touch with what goes on in that world.
Well, I think that can kind of be an asset because then you're not worrying about what everyone else is doing. You're not comparing yourself. You're not looking at their dish and saying, they stole my idea, or mine's better, or mine's worse. You're not in that really competitive headspace. You're just doing you, which is, I think, healthy.
Yeah, and I think it helps you come up with more weird and innovative ideas. I would say I pay more attention just to the chef world in New York City in general, not specifically to the plant-based food, but just what everyone's doing in general, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of, you know, being innovative and coming up with crazy things, Grub Street called your fresh sauerkraut groundbreaking. Did you know that?
Yeah, I just saw that a few minutes ago.
Groundbreaking. I mean, that's a hell of a word. So I've eaten it and I call it amazing. So what inspired you to put a plate of sauerkraut to be eaten with a fork, like it's a salad, you know, on your menu? Because I'm sure that's never been done before.
Well, I mean, it comes from really just, you know, my experience working in health food restaurants or going to, you know, hippie-ish cafes. And one of my first jobs was working at a health store. And everyone's crazy for like the probiotics and the, you know, fresh sauerkraut and kimchi and stuff is delicious. And, you know, that's something that's very present in that world. So I wanted to take it out of that, like, you know, sad little bowl you get on the side of your brown rice dry and sort of bring it to the front, you know, make it. You know, we have a couple dishes, like it's very classic also at restaurants like that to get like some sauteed greens. So we do a riff on that, but with a lot of other touches to it. You know, I wanted to take some of these like health food restaurant classics and, you know, make them right for a beautiful meal.
Yeah. So what's in your sauerkraut, if you can share any of it? That, I mean, it's not lame. Like it's so good to just eat it with a fork like it's a salad.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I definitely put it on a lot of things. I mean, in the sauerkraut itself, the only ingredient is Savoy cabbage and salt, and then a lot of waiting.
So it's just mostly technique that makes it unique and special.
Yeah, you know, you just massage salt into it, and you wait down, and you wait for it to become sour and delicious and funky.
Yeah, it's so good.
And then we just, you know, put a few simple touches, some really good Italian olive oil, some horseradish, some dill, and lots of black pepper.
It's really good. Another thing that's really good, and this I've never seen before either, is your bread, your pita bread. It's what, buckwheat? It's like buckwheat. What is it?
Yeah, so I have a sous chef named Tim, and he's like basically a sage of bread, and he developed this bread, and it's a sourdough buckwheat pita. So we use a local buckwheat flour along with some local wheat flour, and you know, it has a long fermentation like all good sourdough breads do, and then we bake it in our wood-fired oven before each service, and voila.
My only critique is that I wish you gave quadruple the amount every time it comes out, because it is so good. And I wish, I mean, you would sell it so I could bring it home, because it's really, really good.
Well, maybe one day.
Yeah. One day we'll have it. Sell that. And I love that you have it as a pita. You can eat it. You know, you have that kale avocado sandwich, which was really great. I only had it that once the first time I came in. That was fantastic. I'm sure that's a really popular menu dish.
Yeah, it's very popular for lunch and to go and stuff.
Mm-hmm. What are the most popular dishes so far?
You know, interesting to me, our biggest seller is, it was such a surprise to me. It's just our lettuce cups, which is just a perfect leaf of butter lettuce with some avocado and roasted sweet potato and, you know, serrano sauce on it, some toasted cumin, some different sprouts and herbs and things. And it's just very light. Very fresh, almost like a way to start the meal. But we sell, I can barely keep up with the with the lettuce. It's crazy.
People love it, so. Huh. Why is that surprising to you?
I don't know why it's surprising. It just didn't, I mean, I really love it. And I think it's a really fresh, perfect, light little thing to have. But I don't know. It's just, you never know. You never know what people are going to get towards.
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably not what you would expect. I mean, what would you expect? Like, what dishes are you the most proud of? Which I'm sure probably is not the dishes that are the most popular, because that's just how it works.
Yeah, I mean, you know, dishes I'm most proud of. I do really like things like the sauerkraut, because I think it's just so simple and unexpected. Mm. And what are other favorite dishes of mine? I really like the roasted carrots that we have. You know, just the simple things. You know, we have pastas and things like that, but I almost prefer the smaller vegetable dishes, because you can really just, you know, focus in on, you know, just a couple flavors. And I like to see the tables full of all those smaller veggie dishes. Yeah. You know, you like that whole rainbow on the table. It's just really what.
I mean, it's letting those plants speak for themselves, like we said.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Would you say that, you know, 50, I mean, I don't know percentage, but I'm sure most people coming in are not vegan, right? They're just you know, I assume they're just people that want to celebrate the vegetable.
Yeah, probably not.
That's amazing. I mean, that's even better, I feel like. You don't need another vegan restaurant that vegans go to, but this is a restaurant that non-vegans flock to and have a hard time getting into.
Yeah, we want everyone to come, really. I mean,
yeah. And one thing I'm curious as well is that the menu is really global. I mean, there's dosas, which are Indian. There's, I think, Thai sticky rice. There's Italian spaghetti, kind of. It's like really healthy. And I doubt they make spinach spaghetti in Italy, but it's great. There's labneh. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but it's Greek. Then there's Chinese fried rice. So you're literally all over the map. Why did you decide to make it so global?
Well, a lot of that also came from John George and Paulette Cole, one of the other owners, because they travel a lot for their business. And especially at breakfast time, they really wanted to have like these savory breakfasts like they have in other countries, not so much like fruit and pancakes, which we also have. But, you know, that was sort of the beginning of that. And then, you know, I think for when you're cooking vegetarian and when you're cooking vegetables, there's just so many flavors from other parts of the world that really do a good service to the vegetables.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's like a culinary vacation when you go there, tasting the world. It's pretty cool. And speaking of breakfast, I mean, I feel like a healthy breakfast place is much needed, because healthy breakfast and brunch is not really existent. I mean, when I'm going out for brunch, I'm usually eating at home and then just like eating a fruit cup when I'm with the people, right? So What's like, how did you do your breakfast menu? Is this something that you really enjoy doing? Because most restaurants don't offer like breakfast service the way you do. I mean, when we went in on Friday, our server said that 200 people had come in for breakfast that morning.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No, I think what we're doing is special. You know, I was telling someone just today, actually, that the breakfast menu is, you know, one of my favorite times of day. I mean, I love it. You know, and I definitely created it along with my team as the breakfast that I would like to go out and eat that I don't really find out there. So
yeah. Well, thank you. I haven't had it. What are some of the top items that you're excited about on the breakfast menu?
I would say, you know, we do various sort of fruit-based bowls. So we have a couple of different smoothie bowls. One that I think is particularly exciting is we have one made. It's a mango and sea buckthorn smoothie bowl. Ooh. And sea buckthorn is this delicious sour fruit. Mm-hmm. I believe it has most vitamin C of any fruit on earth. And, you know, we get that wild foraged up in Canada. And, you know, it just has a very unique, delicious flavor. And then, you know, there's granola on there and all kinds of fruits and things. And
sounds good.
And then on the savory end of things, we do both khichdi and congee. So sort of like savory breakfast from India and China, respectively. And those are just really nice, nourishing, simple breakfast that, you know, because I generally don't eat sweet for breakfast. I really like savory, salty kind of protein.
Teach his own. There's something for everyone.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's funny you mentioned sea buckthorn, because I was curious. I came in the other night and you had a cocktail with sea buckthorn in it, and I didn't know what sea buckthorn was. And I asked the server, and he knew everything. He spewed out facts. He told me the flavor profile. He explained why it worked in the cocktail. So it was really impressive to me, you know, that you've been able to train the servers to be extremely educated in these obscure, probably ingredients they've never heard of before. I mean, do they have to like pass like exams when you add new menu items? Like, really?
Yeah. No, they do actually take tests. Yeah.
Oh, I was joking. Wow.
It's I mean, to work in a restaurant like this, you have to love it. You know, you have to be invested and engaged. And you know, our team's awesome. Actually, I think they enjoy it. I think they enjoy learning about new things and talking about the food and.
They do. I mean, at least to the customers, they absolutely do. I mean, every time I'm in, somebody's excited about an ingredient and telling me why I should get this dish. And then they're like, I've never had this ingredient before. I worked here, but I just discovered it and I love it. It's really great. So it's pretty cool, because everyone's definitely very passionate and enthusiastic.
Yeah.
It's great. So question for this about reservations. Do you need reservations for breakfast?
Generally, breakfast, you might be able to sneak in. It is starting to fill up
So. Any tips for how people can make reservations? Is just open table and cross your fingers and say some prayers?
Yeah. But luckily, you know, there's always bar seating, and we will be expanding our days and hours more and more. And there is a whole to-go program during breakfast and lunch. So if you can't eat there, there are other things that you can get to-go, you know, in the office and such. So
that's great. Do you get a lot of people coming in? I mean, that'd be quite an office meal.
Yeah. So we actually have a different menu for to-go.
Oh.
But it, you know, it shares the same principles, you know, very, you know, fresh and seasonal, but more focused on like sort of the grain bowl, salad bowls, like simple things that are better for the office as complete meal.
Yeah, that's awesome. And are you in charge of desserts, or is there a different pastry chef?
Yeah, so we have a pastry chef on the you know, I work with him time to time. You know, we talk about things, and sometimes I'll request specific things, but you know, generally he's developed the stuff. Does a pretty good job.
Yeah, that chocolate mousse and the matcha vegan creme brulee.
the chocolate mousse is pretty amazing. The texture, how light it is. That was an interesting innovation by him. So
incredible. Every person I sat next to the other night had a chocolate mousse on their table for dessert.
I mean, everyone loves chocolate, right?
I
would make the case for two chocolate desserts, you know?
It's great. Okay, so before I let you go, a few fun personal questions for you, and then I'll let you get back to chefing. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so I would love to know if you have a favorite plant-based restaurant besides your own.
To be honest, generally, I like to eat plant-based things at restaurants that are not necessarily plant-based.
Yeah.
Chefs that love vegetables.
Mm-hmm. What's one that you love for that? I love Kraft for vegetables. I think Tom Colicchio nails the vegetables right across the street from you at Kraft.
Yeah, no, he's good. He's good. I'm trying to think. I actually think all of, I mean, not to be too much in the company, but I think all of the John George restaurants do a great job with vegetables as well.
Right.
Recently have had good vegetable dishes at Upland, which I think does a nice job. Let's see where else. I haven't been out to eat very much.
It's kind of
a challenging question.
Okay. Well, you just listed a few good ones. And what is your, this is going to be really tough. What is your favorite plant to eat?
That is tough.
Can you even give us one?
Favorite plant to eat. Wow. I don't know.
Or top one.
I would say if I had to pick something from the market.
Okay.
In general. That'll narrow down a little bit. Like if we get rid of some of these grains and legumes and all that kind of, you know, imported stuff, let's just go market. I would say it's got to be some version of tomato.
Interesting. Well, I look forward to seeing what you do with tomato this summer.
Yeah. I also have I love, you know, like leafy green things of all varieties. So.
Okay. But every time I ask somebody, they say kale. So I'm glad you said tomato.
Yeah, no, kale, honestly, not even close.
Oh, interesting.
I like it. It's part of the canon, but definitely not even in the top 10.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'd love to see that top 10 list sometime. I feel like it'd be an epic list. So what's one of your favorite things to do with tomatoes? I feel like I could see a really great gazpacho gracing ABCV's menu this summer.
Yeah, of course. I mean, when I was recipe testing last year at that time of year, one of my favorite things that we made was an heirloom tomato salad with fresh figs and pickled ginger and the sherry. That was just something that I loved. I also made a minestrone soup with heirloom tomatoes and shelling beans and shiso. That was pretty delicious as well.
All right.
But we'll see.
I can't wait now. That'll be fun. There was a lentil soup you had the other day that was seemed tomato based, was it or no?
Yeah, there is some tomato in there, yeah.
That was really, really, really good. Our server was like, he specifically said, he's like, Chef Neil is really pumped about the lentil soup tonight. And so we ordered it. Was he trained to say that or was he just like being fun?
You know, we have a meeting before every service and we try to talk about things that are newer and that, you know, we'd love to, you know, teach the guest about. And that was definitely what I spoke about that night.
Well, he nailed it.
Good. Glad to hear it.
So what is your most used kitchen tool at home?
You mean besides a knife?
True chefs always say that answer. You know, I get a lot of people that say like blender, you know, food processor, but every time I speak to a chef in a kitchen, that is exactly what they say. You mean, wait, besides a knife? Like my knife. So I guess we'll go knife. But then what's your second one?
Definitely the microphone.
Oh, okay. Does some stuff knives can't do?
Yeah. You know, my cooking and my wife's cooking always has lots of citrus. We love for citrus zest. I love to do garlic on it, chilies on it. Things that you want more of a subtle hit of as well.
I did not know you could zest on it.
Yeah.
Oh, I always use like that cheese, the kind of the cheese grater to zest, and it's always kind of a mess.
No, you need a microplane. It's the best.
Great. All right. Good to know. Is there an amazing book that has really inspired you in some way?
Oh, so many. I love books.
Oh.
See, I'm actually looking up to see my...
Your recent books?
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite cookbooks is on the topic of vegetables. Is I really enjoyed Alain Passard's cookbook. You know, he's the guy in France that, you know, sort of famously closed his restaurant and reopened it as a vegetable restaurant.
Oh.
So his cookbook, and it's full of like cool ideas and eccentric plates of vegetables, but my favorite thing about it is that instead of taking photographs of what chefs love to do,
mm-hmm.
it's all construction paper cutout collage that he made.
Wow.
And it's just fun. It's almost like a children's book, but it's cool.
That's awesome. And it's a cookbook.
Yeah.
Huh. Have you been to his restaurant?
I never have. I would like to. But yeah, there's so many good cookbooks out there.
You have to make it out there. I feel like that's a really nice gift to yourself once the calm comes in after this huge rush you're going through right now.
Yeah.
That'd be so definitely. Nice. And you can tell them who you are and fist bump over plants.
Yeah. So, you know, John George and some of the other guys from here, they've been there before several times. So,
sure.
But I'll have to make a trip one day.
Yeah, that sounds great. So, I mean, I would say, where can everybody go to learn more about you? But we all know we should just get a reservation at ABCV, right?
Yeah, just come in and say hi.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Yeah. Well, thank you so incredibly much for giving us your time. I know you're in your office at the restaurant right now, so hopefully there's no fires going on. There's no crazy emergencies that you've missed. I really appreciate you scooting out to give us a talk.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. Pretty crazy, Neil's job, huh? I forgot to mention that he and I graduated from the same culinary school, the National Gourmet Institute. Woot woot, shout out to NGI. Kudos to Neil for taking his education so far, cooking for celebrities, food critics, and regular people too. I much prefer cooking for you on my YouTube channel and trying to eat Neil's food as much as possible. I'll bet Neil could really use Genex's stress relief medicine in the kitchen. That job sounds stressful, yo. And he's in a glass kitchen, so he has to look composed 24/7. I'll tell Neil about Genexa, and you can go get Genexa's awesome organic medicines for 30% off at genexahealth.com. And of course, as always, you can find more about Genexa's plant-based medicines and Neil's plant-based foods over at partyinmyplants.com/34.